sitting out in nature, I say, I'm watching the trees grow. That's my excuse. Because trees do grow. We all know they grow, but have you ever seen the tree grow? You've got to be very patient and sit there for a long time. And then you can see the tree grow. So that's, I spend a lot of time in my life watching trees grow. Which is basically an excuse for doing nothing. But you know, sometimes people, you know, need to have an excuse. So when you're watching the trees grow, doing nothing, it means you are relaxing, you're slowing down. And it is very true that you will discover that just by doing nothing, by relaxing, by chilling out, you do become far more aware. Aware of your body, aware of the heat of the sun, the feeling of the wind, the feeling of your the path on your feet. And please take your shoes off as much as possible. It's very clean here. It's not like walking in the city or walking in Bangkok. You just walk barefoot 5 minutes and then your feet are black. This is very clean here, so you know you don't really need to wear your shoes. It's perfectly safe. But you can feel things then. And when you feel things, you become more aware. And when you become more aware, you know, you're literally waking up. And so when we say to be able to become aware of the breathing, if your mind is very tired, the mindfulness is dull, it hasn't got much power, you can't really see it anyway, except with force. And if the mind is still wandering around all over the place, planning, or like someone was saying yesterday, thinking of all the problems at work, if that hasn't subsided yet, it's so difficult to watch the breath, except with force. When you say, I'm going to watch the breath, okay, here we go. I'm watching the breath, I'm not going to miss one. You can do that, but it's so tense and tired, it's not relaxed at all. And unfortunately, some people teach meditation that way. And so after the meditation retreat, their wives come and complain to me. They said, my husband was so peaceful before he went on retreat, now he's really angry. You can understand why, because they're using force to meditate. And they use that force, and people do have lots of willpower. And then that willpower, once it's generated, they use that at home, and it's very unpleasant to be on the receiving end of somebody else's willpower. So we don't use that at all. We relax the first few days, so our mind is ready to be able to watch the breathing. So when we do any breath meditation, if you can't hold the breath naturally, it means, you know, your mindfulness is not strong enough yet. You're not relaxed enough. You need to do more letting go of past and future. Just even more relaxation in your bed. More just chilling out. Just going for walks in the forest or whatever. Because when the mind is ready, it's one of the easiest things to watch. So preparation is really important. And for those of you who are out and out Buddhists, you know, you can sometimes read the Anapanasati Sutta. That's the sutta, the teaching of the Buddha on the breath meditation. And first of all, you know, Anapanasati. Ana means along with, pana means the breath, and sati mindfulness. It's mindfulness along with the breath. And please do not mispronounce that, because some people, they don't do Anapanasati, they do Anapanasati. Mindfulness along with the pain. That is not part of Buddhism. People think like that. They're going to sit here with the pain and they're going to conquer it. And once they've conquered the pain, they may get enlightened. You know, for those traditional Buddhists, that's the first teaching the Buddha gave. Don't do that. Don't sort of try and force your way through pain. That's called Atta-Gilamatanu Yoga, one of the two extremes which you're supposed to avoid for the middle path. So we're watching the breath, not pain. If it hurts, do something about it. Now change, take a Panadol, take a rest or whatever, but relax. Example, this is not, I'm just going off on a tangent here a little bit. I'll come back to Anapanasati Sutta in a moment. At a tangent, many times during these retreats, we're going to have the interviews afterwards. Many times in the middle part of the retreat, people come on the interviews, they say, I can't meditate, it's really terrible, I can't do anything. My mind's all over the place, what should I do? And I've got this advice, I'm going to give it to you now, because if that's you, you don't need to come to the interview. Follow this advice now. And that is, I tell people, that I always say it's 100% success rate, this method. I tell them, go to your room and go to bed and just have a nap. They say, no, I can't, it's the middle of the morning. They go to your room and take a nap. But I slept so much last night. Go to your room and take a nap. And don't set the alarm clock. Just lay down and just relax and have a nap. Whatever time you get up, you get up. And once you get up, take a shower, have a cup of tea, coffee or orange juice, whatever you like, and then come and meditate. And every time I said that to someone, they came back afterwards and they say, it worked, I had the best meditation ever. It was so easy. Of course it is, because you learn how to relax and don't get tense and don't stress out. People try so hard to do things, and that's why they can't do it. They need to just relax the body, relax the mind. And that little bit of relaxation is all that's necessary. Now this, you know, going back to the sutra, the first teaching which the Buddha gave in this sutra is actually to establish mindfulness as a priority. In other words, you know, to get that awareness strong enough so you can meditate. So just relax. You get the body sort of nice and comfortable. And just, you know, sleep as much as you need to. Catch up on your what's called these days sleep deficit. Because you know what it's like at home, at work? It's so hard to get enough sleep. And I always emphasize, if nothing else you gain on this retreat, except catching up on your sleep, it's worth the money and it's worth coming all the way for. A place where you don't have to get up in the morning at a certain time. You can go to bed whenever you like. You've got no stress, no telephone calls. You can really relax. And just catching up on your sleep is huge benefits, both emotional and health benefits. What was it, some years ago in Kuala Lumpur, I was asked to help with a youth retreat, 15 to 25 year olds, about 1,000 of them in KL. And during the seminar, talks and games and stuff, someone had this really bright idea of asking the kids, 15 to 25 year olds, what emotion is your biggest problem in life? And I was thinking like lack of self-esteem or fear. But the one which was the most prominent negative emotion, which caused them so much problems, the clear winner was tiredness. And of course, that just lit so many light bulbs for me. Because these are your kids, 15 to 25 year olds. The thing which bothers them most of all is just being so tired. Can you imagine just the schoolwork? And the peer pressure, you know, the social pressures. And just the pressures of, you know, growing up in those ages, trying to, you know, be cool, be pretty, trying to find a partner in life, trying to get a career. So much pressure on those kids that they have this constant tiredness. And of course, that tiredness stays with most people for the whole of their life. Like you now, tired. And that tiredness causes so many health problems. You know, it'd be great to do research. I don't know how you could do research on this, but, you know, I'm pretty sure that most cancers come from people being too tired, not being able to relax enough. Body just wears out, can't stand it any longer. And not only that, you know, the relationship problems, being grumpy with your partner. And why do you say wrong things to your partner? Because you're just so tired. Your resilience is worn down. So just being able to relax and even just sleep well at night solves huge amounts of problems. So at least here, now, when you're tired, please go to bed. Have a nice rest. And if you don't get any meditation at all, but you just sleep, sleep, sleep for the next 9 days, you'll have great health benefits. And you'll be such an easier person, less of a pain in the ass for the people you have to live with. You'll be much nicer. Because you're more resilient, you're relaxed. So, this is a preparation to be able to have enough rest, you know, enough energy. Because you know, that's what happens when you rest, you feel good, you get energy, you can meditate. That it's easy to watch the breathing. So, next thing, what do we do when we watch the breathing? Now, unfortunately, there's been lots of stupid messages from people who say that you should watch the breath at the tip of your nose, or you should watch the breath at your belly. And I was fortunate. My story was that my father had asthma, he died quite young, and I never got asthma, but I certainly got hay fever. So, you know, my nose is often blocked up, some pollen or something. And so when I was a young man learning breath meditation, I was told to watch the breath at the tip of the nose. I couldn't do it, because there was no breath at the tip of the nose. My nose was stuffed. And I thought, okay, my enlightenment is stuffed too. You know, I can't do the breath meditation. And then I heard someone else say you can watch the breath at your belly. And oh, that was such a relief. Oh, now I can do breath meditation, you know, all the year round. But then at that time I became a monk. And when you watch the belly rise and fall, your belly is so close to your tummy that in the evening I just couldn't do that anymore. I wasn't watching the breath, I was watching my hunger. I want something to eat. So that never worked either. I do not encourage you watching your belly in the evening when you're on a 9-day retreat keeping 8 precepts. You start thinking of all your favorite food. You can actually just smell it now. I can see it now. Can you see it? Oh, stop it. You're getting hungry. So, that was difficult for me. And then you figured it out for yourself. Because you know, I had a good enough brain. I looked at what the Buddha said. And the Buddha never said to watch the tip of your nose. He never said to watch your nose at all. It wasn't nose meditation. He never said to watch your belly. It wasn't belly meditation. It was breath meditation. Watch your breath, stupid. And I could always watch my breath. And so I developed a very simple technique, which I teach beginners in meditation. I say, close your eyes, breathe in and out 3 times. At the end of the 3rd breath, open your eyes. And that was my little teaching for them. So they all followed that. They closed their eyes, breathed in and out 3 times, and then they opened their eyes. And I said, how did you know you were breathing in? How did you know you were breathing out? There's some feeling sensation somewhere which told you the breath had finished going in, now it was starting going out. And just what you watch naturally is what you watch in breath meditation. Whatever it is which tells you the breath is going in, whatever it is which tells you the breath is going out, where that's located is not important. How it goes in, how it goes out, that's the breath's job to look after itself. Our job is just to watch, to observe. So we know the breath's going in, the breath's going out. That's all. So whether I was got a stuffed nose, whether I got a cough in the throat, it didn't really matter. I was always breathing. So I could always do breath meditation. And that made it so easy. But it had an unexpected advantage later on. Because I wasn't putting my awareness anymore on a part of the body, just on the breath, it meant a lot of the body disappears very quickly. Let's say if you're watching the belly, the whole area, including the hunger, you can start to feel. If you're watching this tip of the nose, you can actually feel the whole of the nose, and it gets a bit itchy sometimes. But if you're just following the breath, knowing the breath, the rest of the body just disappears and vanishes. And that's an important part in meditation. So, you know, you just can't feel your legs. You know, you can't feel your back, your bottom. You know, the head has just about disappeared. You don't know where your hands are. They're just comfortable, that's all. Which means so much disturbance is taken away. You just watch the breathing. And that was really important for me. You know, when I meditated over in Thailand, because in those days there was no air cons, there was no heaters, there was no even mosquito nets. We meditated out in the jungle. Stupid thing to do. But not for the Thais. Because the Thais, I didn't know what was going on. Because, you know, after you've been meditating in the jungle, you got bitten to death by mosquitoes, had all, you know, these little welts on your skin. Look at the Thai monks, maybe 1 or 2, and that was it. Now, all the insects, all the animals and mosquitoes, they all went for the Westerners. And they left the Thais alone. I thought that was racial discrimination and should not be allowed. Should be fair, fair. And it was only later on I realized that it was just the mosquitoes are actually attracted to the carbon dioxide coming out of your pores. A higher metabolism, and then the more the mosquitoes know you're there. And because of Westerners, we had a higher metabolism, because coming from colder countries. But, you know, we actually secreted more carbon dioxide than the local Thais, which meant the mosquitoes, they saw us much easier, so they all came for us. So, you know, you get literally, you know, we counted 60, 70 on your skin at a time, which was, you know, really hard to bear. And I'd open my eyes, want to run, see all the Thai monks, especially my teacher, Ajahn Chah, sitting there perfectly still. And you got too embarrassed, you know, to get up and run. And only later on I realized, you know, he could sit perfectly still, not because he was enlightened, because no mosquitoes were bothering him. It was only us that were just torturing. But at least it gave me an opportunity to, you know, really to watch my breathing, and so everything else disappeared. And that's how I coped. You know, it was a marvelous experience because, you know, the mosquitoes were there, so just come focus on your breath. You know, on the feeling of the breath, not the nose. If I focused on the nose, my body wouldn't disappear. But just know the breath that goes in, know the breath that goes out. Fully focus on it. And then after a while, the body vanished. You couldn't feel it anymore. So mosquitoes biting or not biting, you couldn't feel it. And then you had a lovely meditation when you came out afterwards. You know what happened? That I looked at my skin, there was hardly any welts on the skin. You know, I thought, wow, this is the magic power of samadhi. When you're really still, the mosquitoes can sense it and they leave you alone. Some sort of force field. But it wasn't that at all. All it was is that when you meditate, because you become very still, you know, your metabolism goes down. You don't pump so much blood, you don't need so much oxygen, and which means you don't make so much carbon dioxide. So the more relaxed I got, the more still I got, the more I vanished to the mosquitoes. The mosquitoes couldn't find me. And I always remember that. So if ever you're in a sort of a tropical country with lots of mosquitoes, the more you get excited, worried, you know, the more carbon dioxide gets out of your skin, the more you're attracting the mosquitoes. So just chill out. Don't worry about anything. Keep cool. And then because you relax, you become more impossible to see for the mosses. The more tense, excited you become, anxious you become, the more you're actually telling mosquitoes, hey guys, here I am, come and bite me. That's why being a little bit more relaxed means you get less bites. So anyway, there you were, just watching the breathing, and the body can sort of disappear that way. Now, how that actually works is a simile of the TV set. And I've been to people's houses and they've got these huge TV sets these days. Never seen any that big before. What they call plasma screen TVs. And they're so huge. But you go on the economy class on the aircraft and you look at the back of the seat and there's a tiny screen. Now, I'm sure that many of you have had both experiences. Watching a movie on the back of an aircraft seat on a small screen and watching the same movie on a big screen at home. What's the difference as far as the experience of the movie is concerned? Does it actually feel different when you're watching the movie? Do you miss out on some of the detail or some of the action when you're watching it on a small screen? And the answer is actually no. That once you start watching, the experience is exactly the same. Because your mind fits into the screen. And you will notice that when you first look at that screen, you can see the edges of the screen. You have got some idea of how big or small that screen is. You can see what's beyond the screen when you first look at it. But after a few seconds, your mind just fits right into the screen, so you cannot see even the edges of the screen. And it hasn't been done yet, but one day it will happen. If you get a circular TV instead of, you know, a rectangular one, or get like a diamond, like a Star of David TV for the Jewish community, or whatever. It would not make an iota of difference once you start watching the movie. It doesn't matter what the shape of the TV is. Once you actually start, you actually go into the middle of it. And everything else on the outside falls away. So if anybody wants a new business, design the TV screens, which are not rectangular, like oblong, or triangular, or whatever, just whatever it is, and it will be exactly the same. But, why does that happen? It's because whatever we focus on, the mind zooms in, and everything else on the outside vanishes. And that's actually what happens when we do things like breath meditation. The mind zooms in onto the breath, and everything else on the outside just disappears. Just like watching the TV. After a while, everything to the left, the right, above and below just vanishes. And you're just left with what's in the middle. What's important to you. I mention that because that is quite crucial. Make sure that the breath is the most important thing for you. If there's a sound, somebody bangs the door, or someone's snoring, or a fly comes into the room. And it's amazing. These flies are such small beings, but they make such a loud noise. It's always the same. The smaller the being, the louder is the noise. Small dogs bark much louder than big ones. Children on the aircraft, they make much more noise than these old guys. And that's just the nature of things. Small things make all the noise. So these little animals may come in and they start to disturb you. Why do they disturb you? It is because, literally, your attention goes to the fly and they become the center of the screen. And the breath and everything else you're watching, that falls off the screen. You zoom in on the fly. You zoom in on the person banging the door. You zoom in on the problem and you forget your meditation object. So, in order to stop that problem, you've got the breath, give it importance. Remember, this is the most important thing in the world. I'm going to care for it. And everything else, you hear sounds, feelings in the body, whatever, they're on the edge somewhere, but they're not in the center. So if you keep the breath in the center, you're breathing in, you can feel the feeling of the breath, and I'm breathing in, breathing out. That's in the center, and I keep that centered. And I can hear the sound of somebody yawning. I can hear the sound of... There's nothing else going on here. It's very quiet in this place. Of somebody laughing, but that's not the center. That's like on the edge somewhere. And after a while, because you're just centering on the breathing, the feeling of the breath, everything else vanishes. That's what you've got left. It's zooming in, otherwise known as focusing. This is what happens in meditation. So when you're watching the breath, zoom in on it. And all the other things, you know, you hear, they're not important. Yeah, it's a sound, it's a bang, somebody's talking or whatever else they're doing. They're not supposed to be doing that. Don't put that in the center of your screen. Keep it on the edge and it will just fall off by itself. And even at this stage, if you've got an ache, you know, in your legs, as long as it's not a big ache, you know, you can feel the legs is a bit achy or the bottom is a bit sore, just don't zoom in on the bottom. Just keep zooming in on the breath. And after a while, the bottom vanishes. You can't feel it anymore. And a nice thing to know is when you don't pay attention to the body, it is becomes very healthy, it relaxes. Basically, you're the problem. Always worrying about the body, getting involved, messing it around. If we can only just let the body alone, let it go, it's amazing just how it can heal itself. You know, you're out of the way, it relaxes. So I've noticed this, the first time I noticed this, sometimes you get into some nice meditation and you sit for 3 or 4 hours without moving. And then I come out of meditation and realize, that's 3 or 4 hours, oh, this is going to hurt. You know, because, you know, if you're half an hour, you get very stiff. An hour, you know, you've really got an ache here, a pain there. But when you get into some nice meditation, after 3 hours or 4 hours, there's not an ache or a pain in the body at all. You know, the body has just healed itself and it's relaxed itself. So if you're after a nice meditation, you feel like you can give Usain Bolt a run for his money in 100 meters, you feel so fit and so strong because your body's really relaxed. So you don't have to worry, oh God, if I don't look after my body, it's going to really ache and things are going to go wrong. It's the opposite. If you can just focus on your breathing, the body looks after itself big time. And it really helps itself and heals itself. So you just focus on the breath without any fear. Let the body go. So all you've got left is just the breathing. Now, of course, when you first become aware of the breath, you know, it's just breathing in and breathing out. And for some people, that's a bit boring. Breathing in, breathing out at first. Later on, it becomes very, very nice to watch. So it is why that some people do mantras along with the breathing. Over in Thailand, I was taught, it was the forest monks in Thailand, as you breathe in, you say to yourself, Buddha, as you breathe out, to, Buddha, 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 with the breath. And when I first came to Australia, I tried that with Westerners here, and it didn't work. Because, you know, if you're born in a Buddhist country, then that word has meaning for you. You know, it's powerful. The word has power. But not here in the West. So I changed it. And what I found was really successful here in the West was as you breathe in, to say the word to yourself, shut, breathe out, up. Shut up. Shut up. Because that's what they really needed to hear. And you say that to yourself for about 5 minutes, shut up, shut up, shut up. There's a good chance you might actually shut up. Or, you know, if that is a bit too gross for you, you can, one of the other ones which was developed was like breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. So breathing in, you're saying to yourself, breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. Peace. Let go. But when you do those mantra, you don't just say the word, you know, you feel the word. You know, not just the name, but what does peace actually mean? So after a while, you're actually breathing in peace, breathing in peace. Oh yeah, I can feel this. Breathe out, let go. All your pains, your worries, your struggles, your stress, anything negative, any sickness, any stuff in the past you want to let go of, any sort of tightness in the body, any fear about the future, breathe out, let go. And allow all of that to go out with you, with the out-breath, and breathe in peace, and breathe out, let go. And you keep doing that, you know, for 5 minutes. Number one, it helps you stay with the breathing. It makes it interesting. And you know, you do brainwash yourself. Self-conditioning, self-hypnosis, to actually bring lots of peace into your mind. And at the same time, you know, when you're breathing out, you know, it's not obviously means letting go. And so you can let go of all this stuff with your out-breath. And that makes the breath very interesting. And it's fun to do. And after a while, you feel really peaceful. You've let go of so much stuff because you've been doing that for 5 or 10 minutes. At the same time, you're starting to really, really relax. So what should happen next is because when you're doing little, you're relaxing, just staying with the breath and nothing else, your body's disappearing, not worrying about time, past or future, then what should be happening next is your mindfulness gets stronger. It's like turning the lights up in your mind. You can see more. Similar to when you first get up in the morning, I hope early on it's dark and you can't see very much. And as the sun rises, it gets brighter. It's still only 8:30, so you know it's not that bright yet. But the middle of the day, the sun in Australia is so strong, you can see so much detail because it's illuminated, it's bright, it's strong. This is what mindfulness is like. Now, it gets really strong, so you can actually see more of the breathing. It's not just in and out anymore. You don't need the breathing in peace, breathing out, let go anymore. Because the breath is already really interesting. You see the breath at the very beginning, just when the first bit of in-breath starts to go into your body. You can feel it. You can feel that sensation of in-breath grow to its peak. There is the strongest part of the in-breath, and then it fades away. For me, it's usually about 2/3 or 3/4 of the way along. It builds up, and then it actually falls away quite fast. And just the last bit of in-breath finishes. And then there is the pause, the gap between the breaths. When the breath is not going in, and the breath is not going out, it's paused. And then the first part of the out-breath happens. You start to exhale. And as you exhale more and more air, it reaches its peak. And then that too fades away until the last bit of out-breath is gone. And you have the gap between the out-breath and the in-breath. And you see all of that because you're so aware now, you can catch it all. And surprise, surprise, it becomes fascinating and very delightful. And at this stage, because I know the psychology of modern people, I will give you a test, something to do to make the meditation interesting. I want you to find out which is the longest, the pause between the in-breath and the out-breath, or the pause between the out-breath and the in-breath. Which is the longest? So giving you a little bit of a task to do makes it interesting. You know, Western psychology. You know, I'll give you a little test, a little game to play, and then you get interested. So you find out, for you, which is the longest, the gap between the in-breath and the out-breath, or the out-breath and the in-breath. Find out in your meditation. So that gives you more interest. So you start watching all of the breath from beginning to the end, And it's not boring at all, it gets so fascinating and delightful. Simply because you're doing less, and the energy is now going into mindfulness, and you are becoming happier. I haven't stressed this yet, I stress this on much of my meditation teachings. The two parts of the human mind, one is called the knower, the other one is called the doer. The knower is what can hear, what can see, what can feel, what can know. It doesn't react. It's the passive part of the mind which can receive information. I call it the knower. The other part is the doer, the reacting mind, the one which thinks, which decides to do something, which plans, which remembers, the doing mind. And you think you've got the message already, I hope. In this meditation, we are subduing that second part of the mind, the doer. We're not doing very much at all. The least, the better. And because we're not doing very much, certainly nowhere near as much as you would be doing if you were in home this afternoon, because you're much more calm and still, physically and also mentally, it means that that energy which would be going into your doing mind is now free to go into the knowing mind. It all starts to change its direction, starts to feed energy into the knowing mind, into mindfulness. What happens is after you've gone through your dullness and sleepiness the first couple of days, which is natural because you've got to catch up, the energy starts going into knowing. You literally wake up. You don't need so many cups of coffee to get you going in the morning. You've got natural energy. You don't need so much sleep. And you will find, surprise, surprise, that after a while you start getting up earlier. Naturally, without putting an alarm clock on. You just feel like, well, I don't want to sleep anymore. I'm woken up, I'm fine. You get more energy into mindfulness, into knowing. Not only does that get energized, but whatever you see becomes more delightful. In the same way that, for those of you who have to go to work and you have your cup of coffee, isn't it the case after a cup of coffee or tea, you feel happier? In fact, some people say their husband, their wife, they don't want even to talk to them before they've had their first cup of coffee in the morning because they're always really negative. But after having a good cup of tea, then they're in a good mood. Why is that? It's just because the energy into the brain, into the mind, creates happiness. And so what happens is the energy goes into mindfulness, and whatever you see, whatever you taste, becomes more delightful. And even the breath becomes more delightful. Now I like saying this because what happens in these retreats, because you're not doing very much, whether you think you're a good meditator or not, whether this is your first retreat or you've been here for years, it doesn't matter at all, it happens to everybody. Once you get more still, you get more awake, and what you see becomes more beautiful. The sunsets become more delightful, the tea becomes more delicious, the food becomes more tasty, everything becomes more attractive. And here comes a story I love telling every retreat, because even though some of you have heard it before, I don't care because I love telling it. When I was teaching one of these retreats here, you know, I'm also meditating. My mindfulness really gets off and sometimes has some really great meditations. I had a really nice meditation. It was so deep, had lots of energy. And so the mind, everything was so beautiful. And the reason I came out of meditation, because I had to go to the toilet. You know, for what is called in Australia a number two. You know what number two is, don't you? No. You know, not the yellow stuff, the brown stuff. So, you know, I just did my stuff, and I made a mistake. You know, if you've got good meditation, don't look at the toilet bowl. That's what I did. I looked down to see what I'd just done, and I went, wow, look at that. That is beautiful. I've never in my life seen such a beautiful piece of shit. We're going to end up looking at it next time. It's not just like, all those little balls are all put together. It's like some statue by Michelangelo, the way they're all put together. And the colour browns. I mean, they're really deep and rich brown. Now, brown is my favourite colour, as you probably know by now. And it's not just one shade of brown, there's all different shades of brown on that. And there's always just a little bit of mucus on there somewhere. And that makes it sparkle like a diamond. So it is beautiful. And I haven't even got on to the fragrance yet. That's been a toilet humour for you. But it's actually true. That I was looking at that and I said, wow, that is so incredibly beautiful and fragrant. And this is just what happens. Just because, you know, you've got really beautiful meditation, your energy's up there, whatever you see becomes incredibly beautiful and delightful, even if it's the contents of a toilet bowl. And, you know, the next thing, of course, I had to flush the toilet. And that was one of the most difficult things I've ever done. It's only because I've been training all my life in letting go. I could do that. Oh, cheek. Should I? Oh, should I take it out and just put it? No. Come on. Ow. Oh, that hurts. And it flushed away. I like telling that story because it's actually quite common. Just on the last retreat, there's a lady, she came up to me in the interviews and said she was not looking in the toilet bowl. She was sitting on the seat and just looking on, you know, the tiles on your wall. You know, you've got nothing else to look at, you know, when you're on the toilet bowl. And they're just really cheap tiles. They're actually literally, it was a warehouse caught on fire and somebody bought these really cheap. And so, you know, we got given them to build the toilet. So those tiles which you have there, they're, you know, giveaways. They're not sort of expensive or beautiful tiles, just ordinary white glazed tiles. And she was looking and she had some really good meditation. And she was on that toilet bowl for half an hour. Just really getting off on the beautiful tiles. It was incredibly beautiful. Amazing. Just the way it reflected everything. It was just so smooth and sensual. She was really into it. Just watching the tile on the wall. And these are just examples of just what happens. When you get strong mindfulness, everything becomes incredibly beautiful. And then you're just having a great time. Sometimes you look at the floor, that bamboo in front of you. How many colours of brown are there? Hundreds. And just the way it is all put together, that is incredibly beautiful. No, but when you're mindful, it just really comes right out at you. So that's what happens when you start getting still. It gets really strong mindfulness. Everything becomes really, really beautiful. So if you see somebody, you know, just looking at their broccoli, you know, when they're having their lunch and going, wow, look at that. Wow, wow. Just you understand what they're doing. They're not going crazy. You don't have to call the doctor. They're just getting really off on them. Just even the look of a piece of broccoli. Wow. Now, the reason I say this happens is because this is important in meditation. You know, you're watching this breath and the breath becomes absolutely incredibly beautiful. Delightful. And that's the reason it means you can't take your eyes off it. You're there for half an hour now just watching the breath as happy as you can be. And you don't want anything else in the whole world. That's where you get the sustained attention from the joy. In the sutras, the Buddha called out the arising of piti sukha, of joy and happiness along with the breath. I used to call it the beautiful breath or the delightful breath. You're just watching there and just watching this breath, so delightful, so happy. And you can meditate for hours. No problem at all. And it's not as if you know, try and set your record or you force yourself. It's just so natural because you're having fun. And that's, I always call that the pivot point in meditation. That's why I want people to get to the delightful breath. Because everything else after that is really easy. Just a matter of time. But when you get to the delightful breath, you're having the greatest time. And you're really happy on this retreat. And you understand why the next retreat in April, you know, that booked out in 7 minutes. You know, this is what happens. Well, why on earth are people sort of so keen to come on these retreats? You know, when you have to go without food in the afternoon, no sex, no movies, can't even get your internet. And just, you know, this is almost like torture. But why is people really like coming here? Because they get these incredible delightful experiences. And they think, wow, this is really, really nice. They get so much pleasure out of meditation. Sitting here, just so peaceful, so relaxed, just delightful breath, watching delightful pieces of shit in the toilet bowl. Everything is just so nice, wonderful. This is what will happen to you. So as long as you follow the instructions. And all it really is, you know, relaxing first of all, so you can watch the breath. And the breath becomes an object where you can actually be still with. And it just focuses the mind. Breathing in peace, breathing out, letting go. And soon you get so still and so peaceful. And even when you do the walking meditation, now after a while, just lifting the foot, there's so much detail in just lifting one foot. So many different feelings. And can you notice your foot, when you do one step, does it go straight up? Does it go to the left a bit or back a bit? How does actually your foot move through space as it walks? Because my one, it moves up and it goes back a bit and then it arcs forward and then it goes down. What part of your foot leaves the ground first? What part goes down onto the ground first when you finish your step? Can you feel just how the weight moves from one leg to another? There's so much to watch that after a while it becomes absolutely fascinating. And my story of walking meditation, the first year I was a monk in Bangkok, of all places, really noisy. I'd do some walking meditation every morning for about an hour. In the main hall, I don't know why they have these in, supposed to be meditation halls, had a grandfather clock, which, you know, chimed the quarter hours like Big Ben in London. But at least I knew what time it was. And it took me half an hour to walk from one end to the other, maybe a bit shorter than from here to the end, and half an hour to walk back again, just naturally, because there's so much going on, you know, in the feet. And on this occasion, I was, you know, hadn't finished, I was about only 3/4 of the way through, and I was just watching this incredibly delightful, amazing feelings of just the foot moving up. And I could hear, like, you know, in the distance somewhere, this sound. Brahma Wang So. Somebody was calling me, but they were so far away. I didn't understand what it was. And then it was louder. Brahma Wang So. And I could actually feel him. It was right in my ear hole. Because I had forgotten I was supposed to go to a ceremony that day. And I was late, and they sent a monk to try and get me. It's not easy to get a monk out of meditation. Because he was shouting at me, right next to me. And he was so into the meditation, to the walking meditation. It literally did feel like he was about at least 100 meters away. And then I realized what was going on. And so, you want to face him and explain yourself. But I couldn't face him that quickly, because as I started moving my head, it's amazingly incredible sensations when your head just moves from the left to the right. And I was watching all these things. This is amazing. And I was trying hard to move it quickly, but it wouldn't go quickly because there's too much going on. It was just so delightful. It took me a couple of minutes actually to turn my head around. This is really going much faster than what really happened. Until I saw him. And you know, he was really concerned about me. And then I said, "What?" You know, because when you're really still and peaceful, it's so hard to sort of, you know, come out of, you know, first gear and go into fourth gear again. It just, you can't do it. And that was a good sign of just how peaceful I'd got in my walking meditation. Having a wonderful time, so happy. Just, you know, watching the incredible feelings of the feet. That was like piti sukha, this delight coming up in the meditation. You know, just enjoying yourself. And people think, wow, it's incredible. Just walking is so delightful. It's not the walking is delightful, it's the stillness which comes from the walking which is so delightful. Because you're simplifying, you're just walking backwards and forwards, not going anywhere, just 2 meters in front of you. And then you become very, very peaceful. And it means that the peacefulness, the mindfulness increases. And when the mindfulness increases, you can see so much more. And after you see so much more, everything becomes delightful. You can happily just walk there for hours, having a wonderful, peaceful, happy time. So this is a happiness coming up in your meditation, because mindfulness is becoming very, very strong. So that's the breath meditation. Now, once that mindfulness gets going and you get lots of happiness in the meditation, because again, the delight means, you know, you don't have to force anything, you just relax, it becomes good fun, you get even more peaceful. Remember, I did make a point earlier, I should have got this earlier on in my monastic life, it was only a couple of years ago, when you notice the delight in the body when it's relaxing, how nice it is to relax, the delight takes you deep into physical relaxation. If you perceive just how comfortable it is to relax, just perceiving that pleasure of relaxation gets you more relaxed. Seeing the pleasure of just watching the breath, or the pleasure of stillness, makes you more still. You get really incredibly still, which means that you don't need much breathing. So the breath gets lighter and lighter. Literally, you don't need so much oxygen. You're not doing anything. Just like a car in the garage, just purring, it's not doing anything. Just sitting there, just ticking over, until the breath gets so soft that it disappears. The breath has done its job, taking you into a deep state of stillness. The breath vanishes. And what happens when it vanishes? When the breath disappears, you will find out tomorrow, the same time, the same place. Because I remember going to these movies as a kid, and they'd always Batman or Charlie Chan or something. They'd always leave Batman sort of, you know, falling off a cliff with no way out, and you have to wait till next week to find out how he escaped. So this is marketing. Find out tomorrow, same time, same place. What happens when the breath disappears?